Let's call this meeting of the House Judiciary Committee to order. It is 1:10 p.m. on Wednesday, March 4th, 2020. Before we begin, I want to thank Jordan May, the House Judiciary Secretary, who makes sure we have a transcript of our meetings, and Madison Truitt from the Juneau LIO, who makes sure we have sound. At this time, I want to remind committee members and all those in the room to please silence your cell phones. Present today, we have Representative Ledoux, Representative Drummond, Representative Shaw, Representative Eastman, and myself, Representative Clayman. We have a quorum to conduct business. Our first and only order of business today is House Bill 148, Marriage Witnesses, sponsored by my office. This is the first hearing of the bill in the House Judiciary Committee. As I'm sponsor of the bill, I'm going to pass the gavel to Representative Drummond for the duration of the bill presentation up until we hear public testimony.
Here to introduce the bill is Representative Clayman and his staff, Sophie Jonas. You know the drill about identifying yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for hearing House Bill 148, an act relating to solemnization of marriage. At present, during the solemnization of marriage, couples must assent to the marriage in the presence of each other, the person solemnizing the marriage, and at least two additional witnesses. Afterward, all parties must sign the marriage certificates. House Bill 148 would eliminate the marriage witness requirements for the two additional witnesses at marriage solemnization and the signatures of those two witnesses on marriage certificates. These changes will bring our ceremonial requirements into the modern age and help support Alaska's destination wedding industry while preserving the integrity of marriage solemnization. Alaska is one of 20 states that require two wedding witnesses in addition to the person officiating the marriage. 25 states do not require any wedding witnesses. Wedding witnesses played a critical role in past centuries when record keeping was less automated and less accurate. In England, prior to the 18th century, the legal requirements of marriage were governed by the canon law of the Church of England. A marriage was considered valid as long as the union was consented to by both parties and celebrated by an Anglican clergyman. This largely informal process that dictated the validity of marriage allowed for the proliferation of clandestine marriages. In 1746, a woman laid claim to the recently deceased Captain John Campbell's pension on the basis that she married him in a clandestine ceremony. The problem arose because another woman claimed that she too was the wife of the captain. The confusion that ensued from inability to verify marriage claims led Parliament to pass the Act for the Better Preventing of Clandestine Marriages, known as the Marriage Act of 1753. The Act formalized the marriage process, requiring that marriages be viewed by witnesses who could later be called on to confirm that the marriage did or did not take place, an extra precaution of record keeping should records of marriage be damaged or go missing. The Marriage Act of 1753 is the historical basis for the two-witness requirement. Today, however, the role of a wedding witness is ceremonial. In Alaska, while the person solemnizing the marriage must meet certain criteria, the law does not require any form of witness verification, no proof of identification, no language comprehension, no address validation, nothing. House Bill 148 would allow Alaska to compete more directly with states like Hawaii and Florida, which require no wedding witnesses and lead the nation in destination weddings. Destination weddings, often on mountaintops and on glaciers, are a growing business in Alaska. The requirement of two wedding witnesses makes the state less attractive for many couples who travel from further away and who do not want the financial burden of a larger wedding. Couples who come to the state without their own witnesses are tasked with finding strangers to witness their wedding. The burden of supplying these witnesses often falls to those who work in Alaska's wedding industry, who ask friends and family to witness the weddings of their out-of-town clients. In addition to the awkwardness of having strangers witness the wedding, the additional witness requirement can place an increased financial burden on the couple. For example, in a wedding in a more remote location like a glacier that they go to by helicopter, they must pay extra seating costs to transport the witnesses. At present, destination weddings bring in an estimated $1 million in revenue to the state in the form of roughly 500 destination weddings a year. this revenue figure doesn't consider the fact that more than 90% of the out-of-state couples who come to Alaska to get married stay for days and weeks to explore our great state. The resulting benefit to Alaska's tourism industry is substantial. House Bill 148 would simplify the wedding process by reducing the number of hurdles a couple must address to get married. And with that, I will pass it over to my staff, Sophie Jonas, who will present a sectional analysis of the bill.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the House Judiciary Committee. For the record, my name is Sophie Jonas, and I'm staff to Representative Matt Clayman. Section 1 of House Bill 148 amends Alaska Statute 2505301 by eliminating the requirement of two witnesses at a marriage solemnization. Section 2 of the bill amends Alaska Statute 2505.32 by eliminating the requirement of the signatures of two witnesses on marriage certificates. Section 3 of the bill amends AS 2505.361 by deleting language to conform with changes made in Section 1 of the bill. Section 4 of the bill repeals AS 2505.041 A3 and AS 2505.041 A5 to conform with changes made in Section 1 of the bill. Once again, thank you for the opportunity to present, and at this time we are happy to answer any questions that the committee might have.
Thank you for the presentation. And we'll go around to see if committee members have questions or Representative Ledoux.
What's a clandestine marriage?
To my understanding, it would be one that would take place in not a particularly public place. So somebody would get married in a private house, or they might get married out in a park in the woods with nobody else around except the couple getting married and the priest.
Thank you.
Any other? Representative Eason.
I think we have a modern equivalent. Some jurisdictions have what's called a secret marriage license. And it's not available to public records requests, but I guess if there was a probate issue or something, then you could go to the vital records and they could tell you if somebody was married. I know when my wife and I were looking at getting married in California, that was an option, but we didn't choose to take it. I have a question. And I'm wondering, so since we're sort of asking the person solemnizing the marriage to do the role that these witnesses are currently doing, what are the requirements for a person to solemnize a marriage?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, we're actually not asking the person solemnizing the marriage to take the place of the witnesses. They already today have to sign the marriage certificate and indicate their qualification to do that, so we're not changing their role. The qualifications are set forth in the statute.
And are those qualifications rigid or strenuous, or are they pretty easy?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, there's a number of individuals that are authorized by statute to solemnize a marriage. Those include members of the clergy, pretty much any denomination. It includes judges. It also includes elected representatives in the state of Alaska. And without looking at the statute, I can't tell you others, but it's a lot of the other part is that there are provisions that allow individuals that aren't any of the listed solemnizers to obtain a 3-day permit that allows them to solemnize the marriage. So anyone could go and go to the courthouse or go to Vital Statistics and get a certificate that allows them to perform that function.
Okay. And so if we're doing a destination wedding like you're talking about, how far ahead of time do they need to plan that out? Do they need to have somebody getting that, if they don't have somebody already that is a judge or elected person, do they need to, give a week notice to get the paperwork started, or how does that work? I'm just trying to figure out how difficult is it under our current process for me to go to Alaska, have this destination marriage with just somebody, a friend or something.
So through the chair, Representative Eastman, we have invited testimony that can provide you more details, but my general understanding is that the typical couple that comes to Alaska for a wedding, of which there are hundreds every year, they are usually planning it several months in advance, and part of getting the marriage license actually has a 3-day waiting period unrelated to the person performing the ceremony. And so the person, they have to go and apply either at a courthouse or to the vital statistics office and then come back 3 days later to actually get their license. And then depending on what they're doing, I believe one of the that's invited testimony is actually a minister who actually does a number of these destination weddings, so he wouldn't need to get a license. But other times they'll have the helicopter pilot perform the ceremony, and then that person would have to go down to the courthouse within 3 days of the ceremony and get the certificate for that person, and that requires somebody to go through the process of getting that.
Thank you.
Any other committee member questions? Thank you for that presentation. Representative Klayman, you are correct, sir. Section 2505-261 lists all that who may solemnize the marriage. I believe we recently amended the law to include individuals holding an elective office in the state, and then 2505-271 is the duty of officiating a person before the ceremony. I do note that if the officiating person knows of a legal impediment to the marriage, the officiating person may not perform the ceremony. A question that I have, if no other community members have questions, Representative Klayman, is
that you're going to let me off the hook.
Yeah, no, just historically, you know, going back hundreds of years, maybe even thousands of years, the whole, you know, presence of two witnesses has always been kind of a big deal. Like, you, if you made an accusation against someone and it was unsupported by at least two witnesses, whether it was the Hammurabi Code or the Magna Carta, and then the common law out of England was kind of based on, you know, if you didn't have those two witnesses, then you're pretty much, your credibility was to be, didn't mean it wasn't credible, but it was to carry less weight. So with the seriousness of marriage, it is a serious ceremony. How would you respond to that? Are we minimizing this, the seriousness of marriage with?
I don't think we're minimizing the seriousness of marriage at all. As we talked about, I think before you got here, the actual two witness requirement dates from the Marriage Act of 1753, and that, so it actually postdates the Magna Carta by some centuries.
Yeah.
And what happened leading up to that was that the state, meaning England, had left all these matters of controlling marriage to the church.
Mm-hmm.
And the church was performing ceremonies, and this, so this particular captain, after he died, there was a clergy with the Church of England that said he had married one woman, and another woman who had presumably a clergy member that said she too had married the captain. And the church didn't have any records of this, and the church, although that's who they had relied on to perform this function, and effectively the state had stayed out of that function, that caused Parliament to pass laws that got Parliament and the state more in the business of regulating marriage, because at some level they found that leaving it to the church didn't actually work as well as they had hoped, even though in those days, of course, the king or the queen was the head of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And so the two-witness requirement was brought in, and I think it was much more community-based. So in those days, we didn't have people flying across the country to get married at some destination. You would typically get married in your community, and the two-witness requirement was a way of making sure members of the community that knew the couple could be present for the wedding. Even if it was a small wedding, you would still have two people from the community who, if it became a question of doubt, you could go and say, who was there? And you'd, hopefully they weren't getting people that were in their 80s sending the marriage, but people who were still around that could vouch for what actually occurred. Today here in Alaska, we have, we have a very rigorous record-keeping requirement, and people have to apply for a marriage license and then send it in, and then that's maintained by vital statistics. But the other part that's very different is that the people who are witnesses, they don't have to provide their name, address, and many times there are witnesses who wouldn't even know where to begin to find them because they're just signing the document and they don't even, I don't believe they even have to print their name. And you will hear, I think, from some of the invited testimony, I think one was, you know, they'll do some in hotels, guests in hotels, and the hotels will go find somebody from the house cleaning staff to come in and attend and be witnesses to the wedding, because a couple will be here in Alaska they came on their own to get married. And so that wedding witness requirement has changed with the times, both because we have very good record keeping to show what's actually occurred, but the other part is that what we're actually asking of witnesses, there's no way to track them down even if we wanted to find somebody.
Okay. So one just follow-up is, so the statute that deals with unlawful marriage, you know, Alaska, and I think every state now has unlawful marriage. Basically, you can only be married to one person.
Right.
I think it's what it is. So we're all on the same page on that now as states. So you can only be legally married to one person. So in a prosecution, let's say if it's found that someone is legally married and to different people, different states, by doing away with the witness requirement, would that make it harder legally for, you know, ultimately if you're in a civil case and it's a divorce or it's, I think unlawful marriage is actually a misdemeanor. So it could be a criminal case too, but more than likely it'd be a divorce case. Would it be harder to uphold our marriage laws if we didn't have those witnesses to call on and say, yeah, because, you know, the commissioner could die, person who solemnized the marriage could have tipped over, and you're right, a license could still be filed, but it's nice to go have people to talk to and say, were you there when the marriage happened?
Interesting enough, Representative Kopp, in my somewhat diverse legal career, I actually have experience with this issue, not as a criminal matter, because I've never, although there may be a statute, I've never actually seen any or heard of any criminal prosecution for improper marriage. That was probably an issue in the 1800s when there was a lot of concern about Utah entering the Union and the polygamy issues in Utah, which the church eventually changed their view about polygamy, which preceded the entry into the Union. But the issue comes up more about, is there evidence of divorce? And so there was a case that I was involved with and involved a death, and the question was whether or not the widow that was claiming to be entitled to the estate of the decedent, the question was whether that person, whether the decedent had actually been lawfully divorced prior to the marriage to the person claiming the benefits of marriage. And the notion of trying to find somebody, I mean, there were found marriage certificates for both marriages, and no one started looking for witnesses. We just looked for the marriage certificates, and so there were clearly two marriages. And the question was whether there was a decree of divorce that we could find. And again, you don't go look for the judge, because judges come and go. You actually go look for the court records to reflect the actual divorce, and we knew where the divorce had occurred, and we went to the vital records in that location and were able to obtain a copy of the divorce certificate, which showed that the first marriage had lawfully ended, meaning that second marriage was legal. And so I would, at least from my experience, if one is questioning the authenticity of marriage, I would suggest in any of our 50 states the first stop will be the vital records for that state, because that's the most reliable evidence.
Right. I'm going to call for an Eddie's. Eddie's.
Are there any other questions for the Representative Eastman?
Thank you. So I'm curious. Now, this bill does kind of raise an interesting question. You have kind of alluded to it, the fact that
Representative Eastman, all I can tell you is that everyone thinks, what's the big deal? But everyone wants to talk about this issue.
Yeah, very interesting. So you raise the issue about, you know, maybe some of these witness requirements are kind of outdated and, you know, maybe go back to pre-technological times and so forth. And I'm curious, is there something special about marriage that sort of triggers this? Or maybe we should be looking more generally at the various witness requirements we have in statute. I know I seem to recall, you know, coming across various witness requirements and all sorts of other situations, health care issues, absentee ballots, and so forth. If it's not necessary for marriage, should it be necessary for other stuff? I mean, marriage is kind of important.
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, this bill, I got interested in this bill because we were contacted by wedding photographers that were explaining the impact that the wedding witness requirement was having on them to help people celebrate their marriage. And I think they will actually do a better job explaining the kind of the realities of that impact on people and people that will plan trips for months in advance to come to Alaska. I think there may be other instances in the law that you might want to look into where the witness requirements may not be so essential, but this is the only issue I looked at for purposes of this bill and
Thank
haven't
you.
Looked elsewhere.
Are there other questions? Seeing none, with that, I will pass the gavel back to the chair. Take a brief ease.
We're back on record. Thank you, Representative Stutes, Representative Drummond, and Representative Kopp in absentia for managing the hearing to this point. I would like to now open the hearing for invited and public testimony in House Bill 148. If you are on the phone, please make sure you're not on a speakerphone, as the sound quality is not as clear and it's often difficult to hear what you're saying. And first we're going to call on Joe Connolly from Chugach-Peaks Photography to provide invited testimony. Mr. Connolly.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for taking the time to hear House Bill 148. My name is Joe Connolly. I work with Chugach-Peaks Photography, and I'm a wedding photographer based in Anchorage, but we travel all over the state and photograph weddings year-round. I just want to start off before I talk about my prepared testimony, just to emphasize that this is not an attack on marriage. It's not undermining marriage. It's actually more the opposite, trying to encourage more people to get married and make it an easier process for the folks that are coming to Alaska to do that. So the main thing I'd like to also emphasize is that there's 30 states that do not require any witnesses, and it's both Republican and Democrat-dominated states. It's not like just the Republicans or just the Democrats have witnesses or don't have witnesses. It's a pretty bipartisan issue. So with that said, I understand there's a lot of really pressing bills and matters you guys all have to consider, and I really do appreciate you guys taking the time to hear this information from us. But, you know, the economic impact of weddings in this state is actually more significant than you might expect, and requiring two witnesses to be present is an unfair burden and an awkward intrusion into what these people intended as a private and personal event. The very act of eloping is to get away from it all and have no family present, have a small wedding, keep it simple, more affordable than having a wedding with 150 people. And so when these folks come up here, that's what they're really looking for. They're looking for solitude, they're looking for quiet, they're looking for something more intimate and personal, and not a big, you know, 150-person wedding, which is basically what I did, and I wish I would have eloped myself. But anyways, as mentioned in the briefing provided by Representative Klayman, hundreds and hundreds of people come from the lower 48 and around the world every year to get married in Alaska. I just photographed a wedding last week, actually, for a couple from Australia, from Melbourne, and we had to deal with the witness thing last week, and it was problematic. But these couples are coming up. It's just the two of them. They don't bring their family. They don't bring their friends. They don't live in Alaska. They don't know anybody in Alaska. And they have to find two witnesses. Social media and increase in tourism infrastructure and marketing by the state and within the state have all increased the number of people wanting to come to Alaska to get married. And they're looking to get married on a glacier, a rocky beach next to the ocean, a waterfall in the rainforest, in a flowery meadow. You know, they want that Alaska scenery, and they want to be in a quiet, peaceful place without, you know, strangers intruding. You know, so at no point do the people call us and say, oh, yeah, by the way, We'd really like it if you could bring a couple strangers to our wedding, or we'd really like it if you guys could go find two random people on the side of the road and have them come watch us get married. That, you know, that's never happened. It sounds weird to think that we would have to do that, but we actually have to do that quite a bit. And we get a lot of people, and by the way, those people are never verified. They could write a fake name. There's no requirement by the state to have a driver's license. There's no, you know, verification process that they can even speak English. It's literally just write your name on a piece of paper and that counts as a witness. So it's not reliable as it is. Anyways, so we get a lot of people that want to get married on a glacier. We kind of talked about that before, or Representative Clayman did. And they have to oftentimes pay extra to bring somebody out. That costs them more money. That makes them less inclined to actually do it on the glacier. So the helicopter company might actually make less money. We might end up turning these people away. They're going to go to another state that doesn't require witnesses, like Montana, which, believe it or not, does not require witnesses. I'd like to emphasize the economic impact that the folks bring to the state. When they come up here, they're not just getting married. They're getting a hotel room. They're getting a car rental. They're going to restaurants. They're buying food at the grocery stores. They're doing whale watching tours in Seward. They're getting on a remote, or getting on an airplane, going to a remote wilderness lodge and going bear viewing. You know, they're spending a lot of time and money here, and trying to attract the people to our state, in my opinion, is great for the economy. It's great for the businesses and the people that rely on tourism. You know, we have a lot of cruise ship passengers that come up, but, you know, they keep a lot of that money tucked away into Princess and Carnival and Holland America. And if we can get smaller local-owned businesses to benefit from some of that travel, I think that's a good thing for everybody that lives here in Alaska.
Mr. Connolly, if you could conclude your remarks, and then we'll see if anybody's got questions.
I got one more paragraph. It's a short one. This bill would put Alaska into a more competitive place within the destination wedding market that is dominated by states like Hawaii, Nevada, and Florida, which don't have witness requirements. And it would also attract more people to the state by removing regulatory burdens, like requiring two strangers to be present at a private event. It creates economic growth for businesses all over the state and the tourism industry. And again, great news, this is not a partisan issue. Both Republican and Democrat states do not have witness requirements. There are 30 states that do not require any witnesses, and they, you know, don't have a higher rate of divorce or problems with verifying if a wedding actually took place or not. This is really just trying to remove regulative burden.
Thank you, Mr. Connolly. I know I was giving you a little leeway. One of the other committee members is reminding me that I often hold you to about 2 or 2.5 minutes, and I gave you about double time. Any questions for Mr. Connolly? I don't see any questions. Next in the queue, we've got Reverend Kian or Cyan Mulhern. Reverend Mulhern.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead. I'll hold you to about 2.5 minutes. Go ahead.
That's great. Mr. Chair and distinguished representatives, my name is Reverend Kian Mulhern, an ordained minister from Wasilla and representing Celtic Ministries. I have been a minister performing weddings for about 21 years and have traveled to many other states, including Texas and Montana, to perform weddings where no witnesses are required, never having a problem doing that. So it's not much different. Alaska's destination wedding numbers are growing every year, and I do believe that this House Bill 148 would help to grow the destination wedding industry considerably. I perform about 150 weddings each year, and about 90% of those are destination weddings. These couples are traveling from all over the world. In fact, the couple that Joe was talking about earlier from Australia, I was the officiant for that wedding. I had to bring a witness for them. So there's a stranger just standing there watching on as they have a very intimate ceremony and speaking their vows. They don't know anybody when they come up here, so it is very hard. I have had couples even have to go to the parking lot and just grab two people from the random people that are traveling through on the trail. Also, most couples just aren't thrilled with having strangers sitting around watching their wedding, somewhat intrusive. The other large part of weddings I do, I perform for the servicemen and women of Jay Bear in Fort Wainwright. And A lot of these couples are very new to the state. They have not had a chance to make friends, know neighbors, or anything else like that. And again, puts the burden back on me of having to find witnesses for them. These witnesses are not being used to verify who these couples are, check IDs. In fact, that is what the Bureau of Vital Statistics does when the couple applies for the marriage license and picks it up. The witnesses are also not called on to verify the wedding or that it was performed in a proper manner. That would be one thing, but there is no way to even know who these witnesses are from just the signature and an address that they put on the license. I thank you for hearing my testimony.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Reverend Mulhern? Representative Stutes.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, I'm curious as to what Celtic ministry is.
I'm just a wedding officiant. I'm ordained by the Baptist Church. I am clergy.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Reverend Mulhern? Hearing and seeing none. Next in the queue, we've got Erin Vilander from Bloma Designs. Ms. Vilander.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thank you for hearing my testimony today. I am a wedding planner. I guess you could call me an adventure wedding planner in Alaska. About 100% of my business each summer is couples who are coming up to elope in Alaska in an adventurous manner. So, you know, we do a lot of helicopter excursions, a lot of hiking. There's just two points that I would like to make in regards to this bill. This is a great, great thing for our economy, for our tourist economy. I feel like it would only be in our benefit as Alaskans, as small business owners who rely so much on our seasonal business to open this up and make this easier. The majority of the couples who book with me spend anywhere from 10 days to sometimes months in Alaska. While they're here, they're doing all of those fun things that people come to Alaska to do that, you know, feed our economy and feed these small businesses that rely on this. So making it easier for people to come up here, I think, would only be beneficial, making it easier for them to get married. The other point I want to make is, you know, I understand the commentary about witnesses and whether or not this is relevant. I can only speak from my personal experience. I've been doing this for a very long time. I've been a part of hundreds and hundreds of wedding ceremonies. You know,
can I just interrupt for just a second? One of the other representatives reminded me, can you state your name for the record? I told them your name, but you need to say it as well.
Yep, my name is Erin Vilander.
Okay, please continue.
So the other point I'd like to make about witnesses being relevant, you know, there is a difference between having a wedding ceremony in front of, you know, 500 people in a church and having your wedding ceremony on the side of a mountain with just two people and the person marrying you. You know, I don't think you can make an argument as to which one is more valid. I think, you know, none of us can know that. The simple fact is that if two people want to get married in Alaska right now, they can literally walk down to the vital statistics office or the courthouse, say about three sentences, sign some paperwork, and they're legally married. So the two witnesses don't really validate or invalidate that in any way, and I think it makes it a very less personal experience for couples who are choosing to do something like getting married intimately. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions from Ms. Vilander? Hearing and seeing none, thank you very much. I don't have anyone else in the queue. Is there anyone in the room that would like to provide public testimony on House Bill 148? And I see no one else online. Hearing and seeing no one, I'm going to close public testimony. And we will hold this bill for further review, and we will – oh, Representative Eastman.
Thank you. You know, I'm not sure exactly where you might go, and maybe there's no information available, but I'd be curious, even if it was just anecdotal – do we have any evidence of witnesses being used in more of, an informal error checking role? And I'm particularly thinking you know, since there's no real requirement other than, I think, by what I was looking at, I think you just need to be pretty much 18 years old and fill out the paperwork to be a marriage officiant. You know, if you have a situation where you're being asked to be a witness and you walk up and it looks like, you know, the girl's 12 years old and you're like, huh, that doesn't look right. And just that informal positive influence on the situation, I guess. I would just be curious if that sort of thing has ever happened that we know of, and if there's maybe an informal role that these witnesses may have played in the past that's positive.
Representative Eastman, all I can say in working on the bill, we've heard no stories about that. The most frequent story we hear is people get married in more group where a lot of people are attending and they haven't figured out who the witnesses are going to be ahead of time, and the officiant signs the person that does the ceremony, performs the ceremony, signs the document, and they say, oh, we better go get two people to witness it, and then they go find people that are sitting in the reception to sign the wedding certificate. We've heard nothing of that nature.
Thank you.
Any other questions as to the bill? As I know, we're going to hold it for further review, and we will adjourn for the day. Our next meeting is Friday, March 6th at 1 p.m. If anyone is considering an amendment to House Bill 148, please let our office know and submit those amendments electronically by 5 p.m. on Thursday, March 5th. That's tomorrow. It is my intention to take up amendments to House Bill 148 during our meeting on Friday, and we will stand adjourned. The time is now 1:47 p.m.